Good afternoon. Okay, I like to start off things with a little bit of perspective over here. So I need a little bit of help from the audience. How many people are in this audience are not aware of the fact that we have electricity, telephones, and the internet in India? Everyone is aware of it. So I can skip 20 slides explaining that we live a fairly civilized life in India. Okay, here's the next shocker. This is an authentic comment from Slashdot, made sometime end of last year, and which sort of puts things in perspective for two things. One thing is what India is pretty well known for and maybe also reviled for these days. And both in terms of the outsourced business and as well as the open source business. Open source has been, free software and open source has been around for a pretty long time. So if you indulge me, I'll just run quickly through a little bit of history over here and what's been happening there. Quick timeline. 1994 to 96, pay attention to the orange stuff up there. It'll give you a sort of perspective on what we're looking at. Linux free and open source software was largely to be found in academia. It was that's where people had access to the internet. In those days, there was almost zero internet penetration in India. Though the internet did come to India in 1988, it wasn't until 1995, 96 that it was actually available for public consumption. Until then, it was available only to universities. So people downloaded Linux distributions using their university links. And in fact, my first copy of Linux came via such a connection in 1994. There was a network called ERNet, which still exists, which is the Educational Research Network of India. The objective of this network was essentially to link up the various universities and colleges, etc., all over India. It had a secondary motive as well, that is by the people who were running it, which was essentially to make sure that a lot of software was available to people, especially research-related software, education-related software. Now, India is extremely conscious of, especially in the academia, they're extremely conscious of how things work over there and what licenses are all about, and they're very conscious about the fact that you can't just copy stuff. So ERNet made a conscious effort to make sure that whatever software was being pushed around on its channels was software that was legitimately distributable, which of course immediately pointed the way, opened up the doors for free and open source software. In those days, because ERNet was also the hotbed for any kind of R&D that was happening, there was a lot of interaction with industry, which still persists today. So it wasn't surprising when we saw free and open source software, especially Linux, BSD, etc., moving in the direction of industry very early on. But all this was happening completely under the radar of the commercial world. In 1996, I got involved with a magazine whom I had been writing for several years before. I became the consulting editor for PC Quest in February 96, and in 1996, PC Quest decided to put cover CDs out once every quarter. And the first cover CD they put out was, ironically, OS2, sanctioned by IBM, supplied by IBM. IBM burnt all the CDs and handed them over to PC Quest, and the January issue of PC Quest had OS2 on it. This opened the doors for us to say, okay, what are we going to put on the next CD? Since we put an operating system on the first one, can we put something on the next one? Obviously, it wasn't going to be Windows. So we pushed for putting a Linux distribution on there. We put Slackware onto the CD, which went out in March 96. And this took off like a rocket, because by then, the word had already started spreading. A lot of people were already trying to use Linux, trying to install it off floppy diskettes in those days, and suddenly having a CD available where you could just install the whole thing off was a great hit. 72,000 copies went out. We don't know how many of them actually got installed, but there was, from the feedback that we were getting, it was pretty immense. Over the years, the PCQuest Linux project has pushed out millions of CDs of various distributions, and it has reached the point, just like Fedora Core is right now, it has reached 3 CDs, 4 CDs kind of situation. Now, while there was widespread usage, it was largely among tech-savvy folks, which is not surprising. I mean, they were the people who were willing to experiment with computers. Most others just wanted to use computers. Industry-wise, there was very high interest in what this new thing is that was going around, but the awareness about the freedom angles was pretty low. For most people, free just meant no cost. And the free angle, as free as a bird, the licensing issues didn't become very apparent. At that point, commercially interested parties started spreading a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I'm sure you have seen it yourselves in the late 90s and early 21st century. Stuff going around saying you can't do this or you can't do that, or it's actually more expensive, or you know, it's actually all illegal software, whatever. The FUD spread around, and around that time, 96 onwards, internet penetration started pretty heavily. Now, what happened over here was that you suddenly had an alternate source of information. You didn't just hear what the vendors had to say, but you could hear what the rest of the world had to say, and not the stuff that was carefully canned and printed in newspapers, but you could actually get at stuff, at information, see what other people have to say across the world, and you could see that Linux, open source, free software was taking off like a rocket across the world, especially still in the technical side. In 1999, when the big commercial guns started moving into the free and open source world, of course, that wasn't missed by anybody. This is where the fun actually began as far as we were concerned. We understood, when I say we, I mean the open source community of India, anyone who was involved in some way. What we understood is that people were hearing a lot, but no one was actually going around and showing stuff. Now, we had our Linux user group meets, but they tended to be sort of preaching to the converted. That wasn't the kind of audience that we wanted to reach. In 1998, the city of Bangalore decided to have this mega technology expo called BangaloreIT.com. It turned out to be the largest technology exhibition in Asia. And in 1998, we were, we saw this and we said, okay, we wish we had a platform of this sort to reach out to people. Unfortunately, that wasn't possible in 98, but in 99, we had a bit of a surprise. We were actually invited by the state government to come, and we were given an entire pavilion of our own, and where we could set up anything that we wanted. We could dictate who was going to be exhibiting over there. The Linux and open source community could go around and do whatever it wanted over there. We had a huge, massive stall. I could go through a 2-hour slideshow just showing you some really great pictures of that. The point was that we got to talk to a lot of people, and the interest was immense. We showed various applications. We showed office applications. We showed games. We showed, I mean, anything that you would normally use Linux for, and a lot of people came and saw and said, hey, but this is what we do with Windows. I said, yeah, you can do this with Linux as well. Now, people began to show really serious interest, and we realized that we had really, you know, clicked a switch somewhere when Rocks Publishing, who you must remember the books, all these Rocks books which were coming out about VB programming in 24 hours and that kind of stuff, they started getting into the Linux game as well. And they had a show, a conference called Bang Linux in Bangalore. Bang being, now I know it sounds strange, okay, you don't bang Linux, but that was the name they chose. And this brought a lot of speakers, well-known speakers to Bangalore who spoke. It was an outrageous success. It also did one other thing. To legitimize all this stuff that was happening over there, the the community was invited to also participate. And they said, okay, what would you like to do? Would you have a little stall? We said, no, we don't want a little stall. We want a little hall. So we got a little hall about this size, maybe slightly smaller, half the size of this actually. And we started giving talks over there. What started happening in that paid-for exhibition is that everyone was leaving the talks and coming, the paid-for talks and coming, sitting in the free talks and listening to us. We realized that things were heading somewhere, just how big things were getting, we began to realize only a little later. Okay, a number of things happened along the way. BangaloreIT.com resulted in a discussion which eventually resulted in the creation of the Simputer. Now, there was a workshop on it and a talk on the Simputer yesterday, and if anyone wants to know more about the Simputer, I mean, one of the Simputer guys is sitting there in the corner. Important thing is, the Simputer, which was looked at as the people's computer, ran Linux. And this, of course, caught the world's attention and caught everybody's attention in India as well. By the end of this period, 2002, it was obvious that India was going very heavily in the direction of Linux and open source. And in September 2002, Bill Gates decided to visit India and made a donation of some $400 million. Essentially, the brief was, you get the money if you don't use Linux. And much of this money was targeted at the government, and we were really worried on how the government was going to respond to this. It responded in two ways. The first one is that in December 2002, the government of India launched the Linux India Initiative. This is a direct response to the visit of Bill Gates. The Linux India Initiative is targeted at only one thing, to make sure that free software, open source software, anything that falls under that umbrella pervades all levels of government and industry. And the Linux India Initiative is not just a government initiative, but it is something that works together with the industry. Okay, the industry and the government were sitting together and they started forming the various policies. I'll talk about them in a little while, so I don't spend too much time on this. Over time, over the next few months, we saw other things like the technical curriculum in India. Anyone who's studying to be engineering now mandates the study of Linux and free and open source technologies. The Goa Schools Computers Project, an example of a very successful thing where the community in India, in Goa, which is a small state, in India, generally known for its great beaches and some very aromatic, smokable stuff. These people got together, went and yelled at a lot of people, got a lot of PCs donated, got all those from across the world, got those PCs shipped to India, wiped them all out, whatever was on them, put Linux on them and started giving them to schools. Now, at that time, there was a lot of talk about Linux in schools. Computers in schools, but nothing actually was being done about it. When these computers loaded with Linux started reaching the schools, it was actually the first time that the schools had any computers at all to work with. So you can imagine what kind of impact that had. So we actually refer to this education powered by free and open source software. The final slap in the face for Redmond was when the state governments started switching. The state governments until then had these tie-ups with Microsoft to use Microsoft software. We are going to be a piracy-free state. We are going to use only Microsoft software. So how are you going to do that? Because you don't have the money to pay for all that. No, we will get some. We will get a lot of software free. We explained to them that free isn't free. And eventually people began to see sense, and we saw state governments beginning to switch. One by one, today there's no single state left in India that still claims to have a tie-up with Microsoft to a point where they will exclusively use Microsoft software. They will use all sorts of software, they also Microsoft software wherever they can get it for free, but otherwise they're using Linux, BSD, anything free and open source you can think of. This is, again, a direct response to an attempt to bribe an entire nation. Don't try this in India. You can see what happens. And This is what happened in a country where people say the place is so corrupt you can't get anything done. Okay, somebody went and tried to bribe and see what they ended up with. Okay, a little bit about the community. What our approach over there was, we decided to ignore all the old guys. Okay, I know I've got gray hair. Don't look at me that way. I didn't always have gray hair. We decided to ignore all the top-level people. We ignored everyone. We ignored industry. We ignored the government. We ignored everyone. We targeted only one thing. We said, this is going to be a long-term thing. If this is going to be a long-term thing, we can start it, but we can't end it. I mean, we will not be there when it finally goes and hits the bullseye. Therefore, we will need generations. And what we did is we started targeting students in schools and in colleges. And over time, got them to understand what Linux, open source, free software, all the things that go with it, what it meant. Something that was extremely difficult to get across to people who were already in a commercial world. It was very difficult to change their mindsets, but it was very easy to work with students. What we did is we kept them interested, we kept them involved, we gave them a lot of information, we had meetings with them, user group meetings, articles floating all over the place. We gave them opportunities. Every student has to do some project or the other, so we made sure that they were working on open source project or working with open source technologies. Now, these guys eventually got out of schools and colleges and graduated and moved into places where they were working. There, they started influencing various levels of technology that they were working with in their workplaces, and they started moving higher. Initially, they may have been very low-level technicians, move up to manager level, and now we've got people sitting over there who really grok the concept of free software and are using it, are pushing it in their companies. And the last thing that we did is we got out of the way. It was important that they felt that they are carrying the ball now. If we would forever stand behind them and say, we will push you forward, it's not going to work. They have to feel it has to be a thing that happens from within. So we sort of consciously stepped back and, people took the ball and ran. A quick look at Linux Bangalore that Volker had mentioned. This is more or less a timeline. I know the names are corny, but this is what it literally was. 2001, we had a Linux Bangalore, which was the first community-driven open source event that happened in India. We had, about 1,000-odd people attending that event, 2,000 people attending in 2002, and more than 3,000 registrations in 2003. Please note that one important thing that happened in 2002 was 2002, this event happens every year in December. In 2002, the December event was 3 months after Bill Gates came to India. Now, we had two problems. We couldn't counter the kind of advertising that Microsoft was pushing out. It turned out that all the advertising that Microsoft was doing was working in our favor because more and more people were now aware of the fact that something like Linux existed. What is this thing that Microsoft is trying to fight? I mean, we couldn't have asked for better advertising. The other thing that happened, and this really gave us a solid push, is every year we need sponsors, right? So we've been getting sponsors every year. In 2002... the government of India sponsored our event. December 2002, the government of India suddenly sends us a fax saying, we would like to sponsor your event. We hadn't solicited it, it just happened. There's more information at linuxbangalore.org/2003. You can go and have a look at pictures, reports, slides, whatever you want to have. Okay, three slides. State of free and open source in academia. Because of the pre-existing Unix background, there's widespread use of free and open source software everywhere. And it's not anymore just technical usage, even non-technical usage. Students are working on free and open source projects, and when they graduate, they carry the information, that knowledge with them. At the industry level, it's widespread. anywhere where there's software development going on in India, Linux open source is just entrenched over there. There are very good reasons for that. I don't want to get into them right now. The concept of offshored free and open source support for people elsewhere in the world using free and open source software is now beginning to take off like mad out of India. People are beginning to see huge revenues in this thing, which is, of course, very encouraging for them. And most important of all, big companies are encouraging their employees to get involved with the open source world, get involved with open source projects. They are providing resources when required, whatever is needed. And finally, the big daddy of them all, the government. Now, the government has intentionally taken a neutral or supportive stand. Supportive, but not pushing. It will not favor free and open source software over proprietary software. We don't want that. We want to be judged and selected on the basis of functionality. Our big victory is that today the government of India looks at functionality of software, specifies functionality, including free open formats for documents, etc. On that basis, in almost every tender that goes out, a free and open source project, if it's available, or a vendor that's pushing it, has a great potential of winning, because proprietary software just can't make it in this. India is becoming highly security oriented, which is natural. I mean, we are a nuclear superpower, and so are all our neighbors, which can be a very ticklish situation. You don't want people coming and breaking into our servers and doing nasty things, like setting off our own ICBMs against ourselves. The central government encourages state governments to adopt free and open source software. It takes the trouble of explaining the benefits to them, which means that our own role has now moved on to the government. It sponsors FOSS events, as I've already mentioned before, and it works completely in a non-dictatorial mode. This is the one thing that makes a major difference to us. This is the President of India. Now, unlike other presidents that we have had before, this guy is actually savvy. He understands technology, has worked with technology. I don't want to, you can go and look him up on the web and you figure out what all this guy has been doing. In May last year, he went and gave a speech, and this is a small part of the speech. In India, open source code software will have to come and stay in a big way to benefit our billion people. See that URL down there? Those of you who have got your notebooks up, go to that URL right now. I created a tiny URL so that you can get there easily. Go and read the rest of the speech, especially the part where he talks about his meeting with Bill Gates, where he said very clearly, Bill Gates tried to tell us one thing. We are not taking any of that. This is the road we are going down. Now, with a president like this and pushing an entire government, is it surprising that India is being seen as not just a software superpower, but is slowly getting to being an open source software superpower as well? That is our achievement so far, and this is what I call the good news.